it's good to be back. It's been 2 months, which is unusual because I've been doing monthly for quite some time. So my life just felt empty and without meaning. We're going to talk about meaning a lot today, so I certainly felt it. In the past few sermons, you got 3 doses of the book of Genesis, and one time I tried to convince you free will's not all it's cracked up to be. And today we're going to look at a famous philosopher. So I'm all over the place, and that's probably how things are going to pan out over the next few years now that I'm retired. We'll do Bible on occasion, we'll do philosophy on occasion, we'll do whatever I've been ruminating on, do a little Buddhism. So you'll get a rotation, because I have people come up and say, enough Bible, or enough Buddhism, or whatever. So, or enough of your wacky Doug thoughts. So today you can blame Albert Camus. Happy Mother's Day, everybody. This is all about absurdism. One day I will die. One day you will die. It is a simple truth, and it's one that we all know and one that we can observe. For many people, it's a terrifying truth. It's so terrifying that humans have created hopes, theories, religions, stories, myths that allow us to escape this really certain fate. When we look around, none of us have seen someone not die in the end. We've never seen anyone rise up to the heavens or just mysteriously disappear and avoid death. We know this lies in wait for all of us. We are often told by people who don't want to face this fact that, well, yeah, you might die, but then there's a resurrection or a reincarnation or a rebirth, something to give you hope that that's not the end. No evidence is provided, of course, but the desire to believe these things is so strong that there is no lack of fervent believers. We need only look around to see that this is true. We want an escape from death, so the offered lie is readily accepted. It may not be a lie. It may just be self-delusion. It may be presented as a hope or a hope that someone else says is true and that someone else is really authoritative. So we're going to hope they know what they're talking about. And then perhaps it's not even perceived as a lie or a hope or a wish. But nonetheless, the matter is clear. We will die. And there's nothing other than that hope to suggest otherwise. Well, if this is our fate, a death beyond which lies mystery and perhaps nothing at all, can we find meaning in our lives? Is life worth living? To quote Albert Camus, judging whether life is or is not worth living amounts to answering the fundamental question of philosophy. Sometimes the conclusions are grim, such as in nihilism, in which we are told life has no meaning, and in fact, meaning cannot be created. Don't even try. Neither the universe nor you have inherent meaning, and pursuing meaning is a complete waste of effort. Other conclusions require a leap of faith, a concept found in many religions. Since the possibility of our lives having no meaning is so frightening to so many, it is better to find meaning in something, even if it's not true, or at least something we can't prove to be true. So you take a leap of faith, and in this something in which you have faith, you find meaning, you find hope, you find comfort. But that doesn't mean it's true. We live in an absurd universe. What do I mean by this? Well, we have self-awareness. We have this sense of self. We have this sense of awareness and consciousness. And yet we know deep down that one day that's going away, that we will cease. And to us, this is absurd. It is insane. It's nonsensical. It's ridiculous. It's illogical. It's madness. Why would we come to be this miracle that each one of us is and then just have it snuffed out. That's insane. And that insanity, that absurdity, drives us to think it can't be true. Not only do we not want it to be true, why would something so miraculous as us cease to be? And so we wrestle with this. Philosophers wrestle with this. All people wrestle with this to one degree or another. There's a category of philosophy called existentialism, which deals with existence. Why do we exist? And there's a subcategory of that called absurdism, which deals with the absurdity of the situation we find ourselves in. And depending on who you're reading and who's talking, absurdity is either we're going to die or we can't figure out a meaning in our life. Those are the two most absurd things that are wrestled with. Our imminent death, imminent when you compare it to the life of the universe, or this burning desire to have meaning, and yet no one can agree on what that meaning is. And that is not much of a stretch. If you look around at the number of different religions, number of different philosophies, there is no great agreement on the meaning of why we're here. There's a lot of different theories, a lot of different hopes, but not a single final answer. Now, I'm not going to pretend that I have studied philosophy in any depth. I have not. So in the second hour, don't play stump the dummy with me. This all came about because somehow, and I don't know how, I ended up with a CD set of the great courses on existentialism. So I listened to that. And when it came to Albert Camus, and in particular one of these writings of his, The Myth of Sisyphus, I thought, you know, there's a sermon in there. And I know who's getting it first. Murfreesboro. So who's this Albert Camus, in case you didn't have to deal with that in school? He was a philosopher, author, and journalist. He lived from 1913 to 1960. He was French, but he was born and raised in Algeria, which was a French colony, spent the latter part of his life in France, and he won the Nobel Prize for Literature for the novel The Stranger, which many of you probably had to read in high school at some point, or at least saw other unfortunates having to read in high school. Or maybe you liked it. I never had to read it, but I saw the upperclassmen carrying it around all the time when I was in junior high. Interestingly, he did not consider himself an existential philosopher, but he's often categorized as one anyway. To Camus, we lived in an absurd universe because we strive to find meaning, and yet the universe seems indifferent and silent. We struggle to figure out why we are here, and in the end, we really don't know. This is absurd. Camus addresses this problem in his essay, The Myth. And when I first heard this, I didn't know what the guy was saying. The Myth of Sisyphus. No, it's The Myth of Sisyphus. And we'll get to Sisyphus later. He writes, "Man stands face to face with the irrational. He feels within him his longing for happiness and for reason. The absurd is born of this confrontation between the human need and the unreasonable silence of the world. This must not be forgotten. This must be clung to because the whole consequence of a life can depend on it. The irrational, the human nostalgia, and the absurd that is born of their encounter, these are the three characters in the drama that must necessarily end with all the logic of which an existence is capable." So you're going to wrestle with human nostalgia, the things you find important and meaningful. You're going to wrestle with the irrational, and then you're going to wrestle with the absurd that arises from your encounter with the irrational and your desire for things to be rational. So in this essay, Camus spends a good amount of time looking at philosophers who argue that this absurdity forces us to take a leap of faith. In fact, that may be the next thing I talk about, is this notion of a leap of faith. Even if God seems silent, we must make the assumption that God is there and that God has a purpose. He quotes existential philosopher Leon Chestov, "This is God, We must rely on him even if he does not correspond to any of our rational categories. So we have this God beyond understanding and beyond rationality, and yet we must rely on this. So he argues. Soren Kierkegaard takes it a bit farther and calls for the sacrifice of the intellect. Camus notes that all existential philosophy involves escape. Escape from not knowing, escape from not having meaning. You are running away. You are fleeing these two truths that are so scary, that you really don't know and you don't know what meaning is in your life. And so you flee from that in a variety of ways, including this leap of faith. So Camus is not a fan of the leap of faith. One doesn't need to look far to find a vast array of religious groups that promise knowledge of things they really can't possibly know. They will happily spell out for you exactly why you are here and what fate awaits for you after death and what's going to happen to you whether you accept their message or not. Naturally, their ultimate knowledge and absolute truths don't agree with each other. They are mutually exclusive, so a lot of them are wrong. Quite possibly, all of them are wrong. But even if you hold out the hope that someone's figured it out, which one is it? Very difficult. And so that is your task in life. Spend every waking moment trying to figure out which of these religions have figured it out so that you can figure out what the meaning is in your life. That is a huge amount of work. And meanwhile, you're trying to make a living, trying to raise kids possibly, or live with a spouse, or who knows what else. You might even be nutty enough to have six dogs at home and taking care of them. And boy, they are demanding. In any case, who's got time for this? If the universe had meaning for us, surely the universe could have just laid it out a little clearer. Or God, or whatever you want to call it. Why is it so hard? Now, if you think I'm being a little overboard on this, all you have to do is find someone who is a fervent believer in their particular faith. Around here, you can find a lot of fundamentalist Christians who believe in a literal heaven and hell. Well, go and ask one of them. Do you ever worry at night as you lay in bed that maybe the Muslims are right and you're wrong and when you die you're going to hell? Does that ever bother you? And it's amazing, the answer is almost always no. Never even a possible consideration that one of these other major religions on planet Earth could be right. And my major religion might be wrong, because if the Muslims are right, a lot of Christians are going to be really surprised in the afterlife. Conversely, you could do that same experiment with a Muslim or an Orthodox Jew or any other religion in which people think, we've got it figured it out and everyone else is wrong. How much have you really looked into the alternatives? And a lot of people have not looked into many alternatives. So while many are willing to take a leap of faith, and we can see that obviously, they mostly leap into something that's well known in their culture. Let's face it. You don't have a great, even spread of religious beliefs in many countries. Generally, they tend to emphasize one or two, whereas if you're going by pure randomness, you'd have everyone spread out all over the world, but that's not how it works. So people are raised in a faith, and that's the comforting faith, and that's where the leap of faith goes. Now, it is true that some are willing to look beyond national borders, but mostly we find absolute truth in the absolutely familiar. So now let's look at Camus' thoughts on those who would live without a leap of faith. How do those who are willing to face absurdity carry on? Does life have meaning and does it matter? He writes, "It was previously a question of finding out whether or not life had to have meaning to be lived. It now becomes clear, on the contrary, that it will be lived all the better if it has no meaning." If you snooze through that last sentence, he's saying, it might be better if life doesn't have meaning. Living an experience, a particular fate, is accepting it fully. Now, no one will live this fate knowing it to be absurd, unless he does everything to keep before him that absurd brought to light by consciousness. In other words, to live fully, you must face your fate. If your fate is absurd, you must nonetheless face it. If you do not keep that absurdity in front of you each moment you're alive, then your life starts to lose value and meaning. It starts to be almost nothing, a mechanical thing without depth. Rather than giving in to despair, however, we face this absurdity head on. This is our act of defiance, our revolution against a seemingly uncaring universe. He writes, "The theme of permanent revolution is thus carried into individual experience. Living is keeping the absurd alive. Keeping it alive is, above all, contemplating it." You got to think about it all the time. The absurd dies only when we turn away from it. One of the only coherent philosophical positions is thus revolt. It is a constant confrontation between man and his own obscurity. You are revolting against your own obscurity when you're honest with yourself, when you face the absurdity of your situation. Just as danger provided man the unique opportunity of seizing awareness, so metaphysical revolt extends awareness to the whole of experience. It is that constant presence of man in his own eyes. It is not aspiration, for it is devoid of hope. That revolt is the certainty of a crushing fate without the resignation that ought to accompany it. The absurd, in his extreme tension, which he maintains constantly by solitary effort, for he knows that in consciousness and in that day-to-day revolt, he gives proof of his only truth, which is defiance. So, the summation of this is, Camus says, life's absurd, but in defiance against that absurdity, in revolt against that, you can find meaning, you can find a fulfilling life by refusing to run away from it, by refusing to flee, but rather contemplating it, looking it square in the eye, and living your life knowing that this is all crazy, but I'm going to fight against the craziness. And this is Camus' view of life. We must be open and honest about our fate because life is short, then we die, and this is nuts. Life is short, then you die, and this is crazy. This is absurd. Because we can't even find meaning in it. Our life is too short to find meaning in it. There may not be meaning to find, so find meaning in your revolt against this situation. We must refuse to avert our eyes. We must gather within our life as many experiences as possible, living those experiences fully. By living this way, we live in defiance of our inevitable demise and probable meaninglessness. So to Camus, you have two choices. You can put on blinders, you can take a leap of faith, and find hope in something and just never look at reality. That's how he would put it. Or you can live in the face of absurdity. You can be an absurd person. You keep your eyes open, unflinchingly, fully aware of the shortness of your life, and live life fully. This is your daily act of revolt and revolution. This is your meaning, even though that seems absurd. What does this have to do with Sisyphus? Well, Sisyphus was a human king, and in his own mind, in the mind of many others, an extremely clever fellow. And there are many stories about him, but I'm going to tell you the story that Camus uses in his essay. As Sisyphus was approaching death, he wanted to test his wife's love. So what he told her was, "When I die, this is my final wish. I want you to just throw my body in the middle of the town square. Just leave it there." And then he died. And he wakes up in the underworld. And much to his dismay, his wife has done exactly what he asked him to do. He said, Wow, I thought she loved me. How could she do that? So this was his test. Would she love him so much that she wouldn't do that to his body? But she did. And he was so put out, so indignant, that he went to Pluto and asked for permission to return to the surface of Earth in order to chastise his wife. And Pluto says, well, sure, obviously, this is just outrageous. You gotta go on back from the dead there and deal with your wife. How could she do that to you? But when he gets back up on the face of the world, he enjoys water and sun, warm stones and the sea. He no longer wanted to go back to the infernal darkness. Well, duh. recalls from hell. Signs of anger, warnings were of no avail. Many years more, he lived on the earth, facing the curve of the gulf, the sparkling sea, the smiles of the earth. A decree of the gods was necessary. Mercury came and seized the impudent man by the collar and, snatching him from his joys, led him forcibly back to the underworld where his rock was ready for him. And that rock, if you don't know the story, is this giant boulder that Sisyphus is forced to roll up a hill. And just as he gets near the top, this tricky boulder jumps to the side and rolls back down because Zeus has enchanted it to do this, because this is his punishment for the rest of eternity. Push this boulder up a hill, almost get to the top, have it roll back down. And that seems absurd, because we're talking about the absurd. And this is what Camus writes. Because you have to picture now Sisyphus standing at the top of this hill once again, watching that boulder roll down, about to start the process all over again. And Camus writes, "It is during that return of the boulder rolling down, that pause, that Sisyphus interests me. A face that toils so close to stones is already stone itself. I see that man going back down with a heavy yet measured step toward the torment of which he will never know the end. That hour is like a breathing space which returns as surely as his suffering. That is the hour of consciousness. At each of those moments when he leaves the heights and gradually sinks towards the lairs of the gods, he is superior to his fate. He is stronger than his rock. If this myth is tragic, that is because the hero is conscious. Where would his torture be, indeed, if at every step the hope of succeeding upheld him? Wouldn't be much of a torture if he had hope. The workman of today works every day in his life at the same tasks, and his fate is no less absurd. But it is tragic only at the rare moments when it becomes conscious. Sisyphus, proletarian of the gods, powerless and rebellious, knows the whole extent of his wretched condition. It is what he thinks of during his descent. The lucidity that was to constitute his torture at the same time crowns his victory. There is no fate that cannot be surmounted by scorn." There is no fate that cannot be surmounted by scorn. Now, how does this apply to us? Well, first of all, for you, this may be utterly irrelevant. The nice thing about this church is that what I say doesn't carry any authority at all. You don't have to believe what I say up here. You don't have to agree with any of it. And some of you will tell me in the next hour that you don't agree with it. In fact, I don't necessarily agree with all of it. What I am doing, what I'm going to be doing a lot over the next few years, hopefully, is sharing different ideas. And maybe some of those ideas will help you. And the others you can discard. You should discard. So that's number one. Don't take it as gospel. Number two, it might help you because we are all pushing that boulder of our own mortality. We're all pushing that boulder of, why am I here and what is the meaning of my life? And that boulder may keep rolling down the hill for all of your life. Maybe some of you got it figured out. Most of us are pushing the boulder. So what do we do? Because all myths aside, we really don't have the answers. How do we respond? Do we fall into despair? Or does the boulder that we push inspire us? Camus closes with lines like this: "There is no sun without shadow, and it is essential to know the night." And finally, his parting thought about poor Sisyphus: "I leave Sisyphus at the foot of the mountain. One always finds one's burden again, but Sisyphus teaches the higher fidelity that negates the gods and raises rocks. He too concludes that all is well. This universe, henceforth, without a master, seems to him neither sterile nor futile. Each atom of that stone, each mineral flake of that night-filled mountain, in itself forms a world. The struggle itself towards the heights is enough to fill a man's heart. One must imagine Sisyphus happy." And he argues that in this insane and absurd situation that Sisyphus finds himself, he finds meaning and happiness in revolt against the gods. "You put me in this situation, and I defy you by constantly just doing the very task you set before me, and I will not give in, I will not despair, I will not lose hope." Maybe that's not the best word. "But you cannot crush my spirit. I defy you. I am in revolt against the absurdity of this situation. And that in itself gives me meaning. And that in turn allows us to imagine him happy." And so I close by saying, as you lift your boulders, as you roll those boulders up your hill, don't allow them to crush you. But rather, may you find in the struggle, in the absurdity, enough to also help you find meaning and happiness and contentment and the will to carry on day after day. And with that, I thank you for coming out here, and it's good to be back, and I'll see you next month.